No matter how young and healthy you are, life can be full of unpleasant surprises. And without health insurance, even a short hospital stay could set you back thousands of dollars. If you qualify for expanded Medicaid, you can get coverage through Passport Health Plan. Find out if you qualify. Call 855-459-6328 or go online at kynect.ky.gov. Choose Passport, the plan that takes the time to care.
Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Robbing and shooting and raping and killing, bloody murder, molesting, running airplanes into buildings. Every time I turn around, something else is going wrong. Yeah, tell me, what the hell is going on?
Welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Redding. The show airs every week exclusively here on the Louisville.am podcast network. Rick's ready to start ranting and raving about his hometown right now. So here's Rick.
And here we are again on the Rusty Satellite Show. This is your host, Rick Redding, with another show featuring the most interesting people in the Ville. Once again, I have a couple of really cool guests to talk with and let you listen in on our conversations. But, you know, first, it's the 1st of April, and, you know, I've kind of skipped out on the April Fool's jokes thing the last few years. It's funny how it's made its presence known in media. I know you might have caught the Leo Weekly April Fool's issue with a bunch of fake news in it. It seems like in the past they've actually fooled people, and people thought things that were fake news were real news. But now that I think these days with Jon Stewart and all that, there's a prevalence of real fake news that the shock value of Leo's issue was reduced. At least it read to me like an edition of The Onion this year. So, but anyway, it is another week in April. Spring is finally here. And let me tell you, I got some great guests. Sort of a cool week happened. Later in the show, I'm going to have Mark Hebert, my good friend, who had a bucket list kind of week, as you'll hear about later in the show. I posted a photo of him doing one of the items that we're going to talk about. And for me, it was just a phenomenal response. It shows you how popular Mark is. He had over 350 likes and 70 or so comments on Facebook, which, you know, I've never posted anything that had that much response to it. And, you know, it was all thanks to a lot of people being happy about something that happened in Mark's life. So stay tuned for that. But first up, I have a guest that I've been trying to look for an excuse to have him on for a long time. It's Dr. John Gilderblum. He's a University of Louisville professor. He does a lot of work in the area of urban issues related to inner city life. He talks about you know, some of the disadvantaged, I guess, people in our world, people that live near pollutants, people that are homeless, he's written about, and people who are victims of crime. And he has an idea that addresses one of the issues that is on everyone's mind in Louisville right now, which is crime in the inner city, and has a suggestion for a simple change that could make the difference, could certainly reduce our crime rate, I think, if his plan were to come to fruition. So let's go ahead and get started with that. Here's my interview with Dr. John Gilderblum.
Learn about the movers and shakers in the Louisville business scene with Startup, Conversations with Louisville Entrepreneurs. A new episode every Tuesday at Louisville.am.
All right, I'm here in the Highlands at a place called the Painted Lady, and that is the home of Dr. John Gilderblum, who's a professor at the University of Louisville. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rick. It's always nice to be on your show. I'm an avid listener.
Well, there you go. Well, that's great. I know there's hopefully a growing list of people who are avid listeners, but I'm talking to you today. We've known each other a long time. But you had an editorial published in the Courier Journal the other day, and it's really a topic that is of interest to me and should be of interest, I think, to a lot of people around town. It's the idea of turning some of our one-way streets into two-way streets. So give me an idea. Just tell me why that is such a in your opinion, a positive move for the city?
Well, right after World War II, you had suburban development, and they thought one way to make suburbs attractive was to create these multi-lane one-way streets to shoot people out there, because time is money. And as a result of that, they put in this in black neighborhoods and white neighborhoods, going east, going west, going south, all to facilitate greater and faster movement. What wasn't predicted was the fact that these multi-lane one-way streets would be destructive for the neighborhoods, both white and black in downtown neighborhoods, whether it was Butchertown or Russell or the Highlands, and so on. And about 10 years ago, there was a movement to reconvert these one-way streets across the nation, and over 100 cities did it. Seemed pretty simple, pretty sociological. But
what, is it about the one-way streets that's bad? I mean,
well,
how is
it's
that?
It's one is that people drive very fast. There's more accidents on them. It tends to be lower property values, as we found. Greater crime, because people aren't on the street. People like to walk on streets where there's it's safe, and there's two-way traffic, and there's what Jane Jacobs used to say in her book, the ballet of the street, which is eyes on the street. And I used to live on First Street in Old Louisville, and we were the victims of crime there a long time ago, robberies, and even a wilding incident, which I mentioned to you earlier. And what we found is that David James ran for council member, was an underdog, but ran on this idea of stronger, calmer, saner streets. Mm-hmm. And he was the first one to get Brook and First changed over. So we looked at the data.
Yeah, that happened. There has been a small victory in this, right? Because I know, when was it? Was it last year that those two streets converted from two-way to one?
Well, it was done 3 years ago. It was done 3 years ago, right after his election. And then we went out. I got my graduate students, Winston and Samantha, to go out there and measure it. And it was a real big success in terms of seeing property values go up. Crime went way down. Accidents went down. You know, on this one-way street on First Street, there was three people killed because of these people going the wrong way on the one-way streets. Now, there's nobody has died since the conversion. And then the other thing is people like to drive on the two-way streets. In fact, there's been an increase on the two-way streets because people like safe streets, and they like to look around and so on. And as I mentioned in the article, instead of seeing the prostitutes and fencing operations and drug dealers, now you see a whole bunch of interesting folks from same-sex couples, babies in carriages going up and down the street, and people are sort of retaking the street. And
so you say all this changed just the simple thing of changing it from
just a simple thing. It's cheap and it's affordable. But we've also recommended it for where I've worked for 25 years in the Russell neighborhood, which is just, you know, it's a four-lane freeway.
Right.
And people naturally drive much faster, and that's why, that's one of the biggest reasons why there's such a disproportionate amount of abandonment and foreclosures and declining house values and so on. But you don't see that, and I should mention this too, look at Bardstown Road or Frankfort Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, they wanted to make Bardstown Road a one-way multi-lane road, just going. You would never seen all the great restaurants and the development there. So it really matters.
So if it makes so much sense, why aren't Liberty and Muhammad Ali and Market Street, and why aren't all those, I mean, where are you pushing to have this done?
We want it all downtown, Main, Market, Muhammad Ali, Chestnut, and we think it'll enhance those properties. And I know the developers that I work with, like with Bill Whalen and Marilyn Melkonian, they all want it because this is where cities are going. And it's a very exciting idea. The mayor originally, I think, wanted to see how it would go on First and Brook. Nobody had ever done any studies about this anywhere, about the impacts. It's very popular with the neighborhoods. And now you see, you know, evidence of, you know, 30% decline in crime, 40% increase in property values. And these are the kind of things people want.
Well, of course, and it seems like now is an opportune time to talk about this, because we have sort of a big crime issue going on with primarily teenagers or younger than teenagers from the West End
creating crime in this town. Will this address that at all, or is
look, if you look at the crime maps that the Courier Journal put out, most of the crime occurred on those one-way streets after they left the park. And it's a good place to do crimes. It's where prostitutes like to set up. It's where fencing operations like to do, and drug dealers. And once that's shut down, you got slower traffic. People are less prone to go out there and act out. It's one measure among many. But as I said to you earlier, there's always been a problem of underreporting the crime, especially racial attacks and so on. And I knew about this 25 years ago when myself and my late wife were attacked, along with my son, in a wilding incident. And the police came and said, "We don't want you to report this. Keep it under the thing." And it was a horrible, horrible time. But it was literally 24 years ago, I think, and when wilding had become a big issue in New York.
Well, now we got a different kind of problem, crime. But tell me, I know your studies, you're a published author, and have talked about urban planning and inner cities and even a homelessness. I know you have some expertise on that issue. You know, tell me a little bit about your background in terms of how you came to study these things.
Well, one is I get paid a fabulous amount of money, which is a good thing. And two, I came here, and the reason why they founded our Urban Studies Center, our PhD program, which is ranked, by the way, in the top 25 nationally, it's a gem, is to address urban problems. We're here to help fix the city and become kind of like the brains for the city and give them good advice and so on. Sometimes the mayors accept it and sometimes they don't. But as I was mentioning, you know, we've worked in Houston, we worked in San Antonio, we worked in a lot of New Jersey cities and San Francisco. We work a lot in Northern Kentucky and Covington and Newport, Cincinnati. We've kind of had a drop off in terms of our relationship with the mayor here, but we're hoping to, you know, get a rebound and come back, because I think we have a lot of good information there. But we have a great program out there working on issues and so on. We can actually predict how long you'll live based on the neighborhood you live in. In fact, it's more important than, say, your DNA. And that'll be coming out, and we think that's going to be national headlines. We can predict how much your housing values are going to go up. We can predict what neighborhoods are going to have foreclosure problems. But the key variable is back to the multi-lane one-way streets, which just kill neighborhoods.
So you and your students over there, you do all these studies and you provide this countless data, and you say you can make these predictions, but do you find that is it true in other cities that you know, you provide data and changes are made based on that data and outcomes are changed?
Can that happen? Like I said, we've been working in San Antonio, for example, for 25 years on this kind of humanizing neighborhoods, making them livable, and the downtown is just booming. And it is the place where, for example, they have the NCAA championships every year, and it's a go-to place. It's the fastest growing city. San Antonio's gone from number 20th when I got there to number 7 in the nation, because people want great cities. They want cities where there's access, where you can walk to things, ride bikes, and so on. And again, I think that in Louisville, they're very far behind in terms of, for example, on bike lanes. Mm-hmm. But bike lanes are great, and it's an alternative way, especially for young people who have these big student loans now. If they give up their car, ride transit, walk or ride, live closer to work, they're going to be saving about $8,000 to $10,000 a year.
And I know that this may be the last topic we can tackle before our time's up here, but you've done a lot of advocacy for cycling and cycling in the city, I guess, so to speak. And I mean, that's just based on your research into places where bicycles are more, I guess, common or more people use bikes for getting to work and getting to the store, right?
Well, as I like to say, 50 pounds ago, when I lived in Santa Barbara, it was all bike lanes, and it was beautiful. You're going to be much healthier. You're going to live longer. Places with bike lanes, whether it's Portland or Santa Barbara, have higher home values, lower abandonment rates, and less crime. You have more people on the street, there's going to be less crime. And that goes back to your question about how do we reduce crime. You reduce crime by people putting more people on the street. You know, the best way, for example, of ending taking over airplanes where people, you know, try to take them over, it's not police that prevent that. It's passengers on the plane who see that. And it's the same model you use for neighborhoods. Get more eyes on the street, get more people comfortable, get grandma on the porch. This is how, and that's what we call the new urbanist movement and so on.
Okay. Well, great, John. This is all great information, and I hope people can take a look and read your editorials and read your books and understand what's going on at the University of Louisville and the movement you're leading over.
Can I tell you about my website?
Then
go to get a lot of this information. It's sun.louisville.edu, sun.louisville.edu, and you'll get right there, and you can pull a lot of this stuff off for free. We love working and making working with neighborhoods and making them all better.
All right. Well, great, John. Thanks for spending a few minutes with me today, and thanks for being on the Rusty Satellite Show.
Rick, thank you.
You love Louisville. You want Louisville when and where you want it? There's something new every day at Louisville.am.
No matter how young and healthy you are, life can be full of unpleasant surprises. And without health insurance, even a short hospital stay could set you back thousands of dollars. If you qualify for expanded Medicaid, you can get coverage through Passport Health Plan. Find out if you qualify. Call 855-459-6328 or go online at kynect.ky.gov. Choose Passport, the plan that takes the time.
Okay,
to
John,
care.
Thanks for spending a little time with me out on the back porch at the Painted Lady. Great, always great to talk to you about the real issues going on in that he studies regarding life in Louisville. So we got a lot to get to on the show today. A lot of interesting things going on around town. You know, first up, I want to talk a little bit about the waterfront park violence and the effects that it's having throughout our city. I talked a little bit about this last week and how Terry Miners on WHAS has been. Sort of leading the way in the discussion of this topic. He's had guests from the African-American community on his show and, you know, really has talked a lot about the lack of parental supervision among the youth of the people who perpetrated the violence down there. This 200-strong mob that perpetrated some 17 to 20, I'm not sure what the exact number is, criminal acts on one night on March 22nd. And the reaction of the community has been strong, but the mayor, I heard speak about it at length. There isn't any big solution to the problem. We can all complain, though, or we can all talk about the effect of the problem if nothing is done about it. In Business First this week, they had a survey. It's a very unscientific poll, but they asked their readers if their thoughts on the safety of downtown had been changed by the events of recent weeks. And an overwhelming 84% said that you know, basically they felt that downtown had a big safety concern. And that is really important to the future of our city. Mayor Fisher was on video. I saw a video of him. I heard him speaking publicly. But the effect, if Louisville became known as an unsafe city, that our downtown was not safe, it would have a disastrous effect on some economic developments going on in town. I mean, I know people who, before Slugger Field and the Yum Center and Nulu and all the great restaurants downtown, they wouldn't be caught dead down there, much less to go like west of 9th Street or anywhere outside the suburbs for entertainment and for fun. And it's really great the way downtown has transformed in the last two decades. All that, I believe, is at risk. It is seriously at risk if we don't get something done to change the reputation or to make it safe downtown, not make it seem safe, make it actually safe for families to go downtown and not be worried about getting becoming victims of crime. So there's a lot to be said about that. And, you know, there's a lot in the media about that. I just think that we need to have a multi-pronged approach on it. We need the security downtown. We need the surveillance cameras that the mayor is pushing. We also need some to do something about the young people from the West End who don't have parental guidance, who are out walking the streets at 11 and 12 years old at really late hours. And we you know, we have to monitor the social media and be sure that the cops show up when there's when something's up. So anyway, that's going to be an ongoing story. I want to talk to switch gears here. I want to talk about the Kentucky legislature. And, you know, I'm kind of a critic is the nice way to say it. I wish there was something we could do about these guys. They seem to, and there are women there too, but the legislature just doesn't do things that seem to be in the best interest of the city of Louisville. I compiled a list here of the legislature is wrapping up its session, and here's what they didn't get done. They didn't get done, first and foremost, anything on casino gaming. There will be no casino gambling. Kentucky, the effects of that are awful, horrible, disastrous, and these guys don't care. The business community in Louisville and Lexington and all the advanced cities are 100% behind this, but the rural legislators have enough. There's enough of them to keep progress from happening. There was also no hemp legislation, despite Rusty Satellite guest Perry Clark being on here and talking about that nothing happened with hemp. There was not the tobacco companies are all happy. They once again prevented a statewide smoking ban from happening. It's ridiculous in this day and time for Kentucky to, we're in a race. We want to be, those guys want Kentucky to be the last state to really have places where you can go in restaurants and smoke, I guess. It seems what it is. Mayor Fisher's very important sales tax initiative to allow communities to vote to tax themselves on special projects. That went down in flames. I talked with Ted Smith on the show last week about that. There was a bill about for dating partners that would extend protections against domestic violence. That did not happen. But guess what did happen? What did happen, there was a gun bill that eases the restrictions on concealed carry. So, we're just a gun-obsessed society, and Kentucky seems to exhibit the worst of the nation's qualities on that. So, anyway, if you can tell, I'm a little ticked about what goes on in the legislature in Kentucky. There's just really not anything we can do about it. They did pass a very limited marijuana bill that allows certain children with certain types of problems to get marijuana oil to treat them, to make their lives better and all that. And so sort of an aside here, this just happened. It's just, sort of tragic, not tragic in the sense that you wish he'd get a break and they wouldn't prosecute him. But former UofL player, basketball player Shane Bahanna was arrested in Louisville today. Now, he had transferred to Colorado where marijuana is legal, and apparently he's probably had all the marijuana he wants out there, but he came to Louisville I don't know why, probably for a visit, and was in the West End somewhere, got himself arrested in a car with on a pot charge. So too bad for him, and I guess I would say too bad for Kentucky for having these laws, but most people, just feel sad about Bahanan and no telling what is going to happen as a result of this arrest. It certainly would put his ability to play college basketball in Colorado in jeopardy. So we'll see what happens there. So on to brighter subjects. This week is the 40th anniversary of the 1974 tornado that devastated our community, the worst tornado in any of our lifetimes, I think. Anybody of a certain age, I'm 53. I remember I was 13 years old when that thing came through. I was riding my bike over to Iroquois Park, and this was a time when actually I was at Iroquois High School, just in the shadow of Iroquois Hill, and the tornado must have just been raised up by Iroquois Hill and passed over our school, and it hit Freedom Hall, and it went on in the Highlands and into the northern Jefferson County, and just devastated big chunks of our city. And the Courier and a lot of places are producing. There's a photo exhibit actually at the downtown library that is worth checking out. I saw it when we went to see Dave Barry a couple weeks ago. And times are different now. We are really overly prepared. I always joke around that the weather people over forecast, because if we'd have gotten half the snow that was predicted this year, we'd have been buried. But we didn't. And we didn't have cell phones in 1974. My mom didn't know where I was at, and somehow I survived. And you know, it's probably better now. But anyway, that's everybody that was around then has a good tornado story for you. If you're not from here, you know, you can find out a lot just by talking to people about how that happened. So so anyway, I also want to talk a little bit about the you know, I did go to the University of Louisville women's basketball game this week at the Yum Center. Unfortunately, Shoni Schimmel's last shot came up a little bit short, and the season ended for the U of L women one step short of the Final Four. And, of course, last week the U of L men fell to Kentucky in Indianapolis in the Sweet 16 battle, and thus ending all basketball talk around here, unless you're a UK fan. And UK is going on to Dallas. They're going to be playing in the Final Four, and you know, there's plenty of talk. No matter what happened, there would be plenty to talk about the NCAA basketball tournament. But with Kentucky in it, you know, it just fuels the fire of the one and done philosophy versus the Rick Pitino, you know, develop players for 4 years philosophy. And you know, you have to admit that Calipari's way works in terms of winning, and but so does Pitino's. And I just talked a little bit last week about how people should you know, not take this stuff so seriously. It's a bunch of teenagers playing a game, and but it's fun to watch. And I'm sure on Saturday you'll be in front of a TV somewhere watching the Wildcats play, see if they can get by Wisconsin and make it and potentially win a championship, which would be you know, their second in 3 years, sandwiching a U of L championship. So it's big for this area of the country, and it's fun to be interested. I know you know, it's fun to have local teams still participating, because I remember you know, when I used to be involved with it, when the team I'm following is out, I'm out. I'm on to something else. I'm ready to go play some golf or whatever. But anyway, enough on sports. Let's talk about journalism and the Hall of Fame. This week it was announced that Hunter S. Thompson headed a list of people elected to the Kentucky Journalism Hall of Fame. And another one of those people is my next guest, Mark Hebert. But it seems like a weird time for this recognition for Hunter S. Thompson. But, you know, he's from the Highlands. He's from here. He had a legendary career. He brought about Gonzo journalism. And here in Louisville, we're celebrating. There's a Gonzo Fest coming up, celebrating his life. And there is even an effort, and I'm pretty sure, I don't know this 100%, but I'm pretty sure the efforts to get a banner in his honor erected somewhere in the city along the lines of you know, the ones for Diane Sawyer and Muhammad Ali, et cetera, our city's the Hero Banner series. One is going up for Hunter S. Thompson, I'm pretty sure. So, but what a great honor it was for my friend Mark Hebert to get elected to the Hall of Fame on the same week that he rolled a 300 at the 10-pin lane. So I had a good time talking with Mark about that, and here is our interview.
And Rusty Satellite is having lunch today with a man who is maybe the luckiest guy in the city, Mark Hebert. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. You mean welcome to the show for the second time.
For the second time. You know, I was going to make this joke that, you know, you know, good things come in threes, right?
Okay.
So you had the perfect game in bowling.
I did.
You were elected to the Journalism Hall of Fame.
I was.
And you're the first guest to be on the Rusty Satellite Show twice.
I guess I am. That is good things come in threes. One of those doesn't seem to be quite up there with the
I'm not going to ask you to rank
don't
them.
Ask me which one. Yeah.
So, well, let's talk about these things. First of all, in all good fun, I'm on your bowling team, and I wasn't there Monday night. But tell me about the game. There were some close calls, and you're throwing 12 strikes in a row. Is anybody that bowls, it's not easy.
I've been bowling since I was 8 years old, and I've come close a couple of times to bowling a 300, but never gotten there. I always choked in one frame or another. So on Monday night, 6:15 league at 10-pin lanes, I bowled. I had nine in a row. You have to have 12 to get. And in the 10th frame, bowled a real good strike. My second to last ball, my second to last strike, the whole bowling alley is just totally quiet.
Which is hard to imagine in that place.
It is, it is. You know, especially, you know, there might be some imbibing going on. but bowling alley's totally quiet. People are just watching me, and I just totally yank my ball and throw it across my body. Terrible shot. it hits the head pin almost directly head on, and somehow all the pins fall down. And that's how you know it's really going good. And then my last ball, I threw a beautiful strike, and we celebrated. And
The place went wild.
Fans go crazy.
So were you drinking beer during the game?
I was not. I'm not drinking much beer these days. But the odd thing was that I was the one that had to wind up buying the beer for my teammates. I'm thinking, shouldn't they be buying the beer for me after I bowl a perfect game? But I guess it's kind of like a hole-in-one after that where you buy for everybody in the place.
Well, I came by afterwards and had one and bought a pitcher. So, you know,
I'm in good shape.
So that's a long time to be doing something only to finally get there. So it's on your bucket list, I guess, to get a 300. What else? You know, we play golf together, so.
Yeah, we both stink, though.
We're going to get a hole-in-one at some point, right? I don't think I'm ever going to get the 300.
No, you're not. The hole-in-one, I think, would be the next thing on the bucket list. Even if it's a dribbler, you know, 130-yard par 3, and you dribble it down the grass or something down the fairway, and
we'll
it goes in,
luck.
I would
luck
take it.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I was lucky on the 300 game, so I'll take luck.
But all right, on a more happy note, a real bucket list item, you're elected to the Kentucky Journalism Hall of Fame, which is organized up at the University of Kentucky, and this was a surprise, I guess.
Yeah, it was. I'd heard that someone had nominated me for this honor, and I got the call last Friday, and I was just, I mean, it's a really humbling thing to get that kind of an honor when you don't really expect it. But yeah, it's a pretty big deal, and I'm really humbled, and I join a lot of people. And I guess probably the coolest thing about this class that I'm going in with is Hunter Thompson.
Hunter S.
Thompson, the Gonzo journalist, is joining Mark Hebert and a few others, and Wes Strader, the voice of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, is going in as well.
I saw some of the news stories yesterday. You know, the headline was Hunter S. Thompson, not Mark Hebert.
But that is not surprising, is it? although I wonder if more people in the Louisville TV market know Mark Hebert than Hunter Thompson.
Well, that could be
that
true.
Could be.
Do you think that you are, what else, you know, this is one thing you have in common now with Hunter S. Thompson. What else do you think you have in common with him?
Well, I'm only bizarre occasionally. He's bizarre all the time. I guess that's the only thing we really have in common. He's a great writer. I mean, I really enjoyed reading his stuff. He's a weird guy. I don't consider myself very weird, but I consider myself a good writer. So that's the second thing.
Yeah.
That's about it. He probably drinks beer. So, I mean, that'd be a third thing.
Well, it's too bad he's not around and could be at the event. So, so what do you get? What's the deal with that?
I don't know. I think you get a pat on the back and like a plaque or something at the UK College of Journalism. So I don't know what else there is to go with it. I don't think I get like a diamond ring or anything like that. So I guess we'll find out at the end of this month when they have the luncheon to induct all the this.
I guess.
This
and I was hoping it was be like the Baseball Hall of Fame, and you'd get to get me to do your induction speech.
Well, no, I'm not sure I would want you to do my induction speech. I think I'll do my own. Thanks
okay.
for offering that.
Well, you can if you nominate me next year, and I fully expect to get into the Hall of Fame myself. So anyway, but you know, you talk about Journalism Hall of Fame. That is based on your work in TV. Which, gosh, how many years ago is that happened?
Well, I left TV in 2009 to go to the University of Louisville. So I was in journalism from 1981 to 2009, so 28 years I was covering stuff. Started in radio and wound up in television in Louisville.
And is just for our listeners who may not remember or know, your most famous story, I guess, or infamous story, was exposing a governor, right?
Right. I think that's what most people remember me for, was the Paul Patton Tina Connor story, where there was Tina Connor was a nursing home operator who was fooling around with Governor Patton, and when you know, when it came down to it, her nursing home was regulated by the state of Kentucky, and she claimed that the governor was retaliating against her and taking it out on her nursing home and trying to shut down her nursing home after they broke up, for lack of a better term. So,
well, I won't share with our audience the private video that I remember seeing
with
Ms. Connor, but it was hilarious.
There was some funny stuff during that story. Every story like that has some funny moments. And
because it has sex in it. That's what we all hope to have.
Sex, corruption allegations. It had the whole thing.
Well, there you go. Well, today you're on the other side of the fence, so to speak, as spokesman for the University of Louisville. What's going on with that job?
Well, the University of Louisville's rolling. Unfortunately, our athletic teams didn't have quite the year that they did in 2013, the year of the Cardinal, with our men's and women's teams losing before getting to the Final Four after great, great, great seasons. Academically and research-wise, those are the things that I pump out there and try and spin you guys on and tell you how great we are. But it really is, it has been a terrific year for the University of Louisville. We're getting really, 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 really close to raising and meeting our goal of $1 billion for our capital campaign, which has helped defray the cost or the cuts that we've suffered from the state of Kentucky over the past several years and providing money for scholarships and stuff. So that's going to be a big announcement coming up here in a few days once we hit the $1 billion mark, and there are some other initiatives we're working on as well.
Okay, well, you take some criticism in your job, too. And mm-hmm. a few weeks ago, I just mentioned this real quickly, you have a chance to talk about it, that there was a story about the people who got early retirement getting hush money to keep quiet.
That's right? Your word, hush money. That's a bad
I thought
word.
I'd get you to say that, but
no.
But really, there's you know, I guess the public is concerned that people that leave the University of Louisville, you know, that they get paid, you know, what some people consider to be an unfair level of compensation, but. You know, it's up to you and your job. You know, I don't care about that necessarily, but how do you handle that in your job, deflecting that criticism?
Well, I don't know if it's a deflection of the criticism. I think, you know, those stories, to ask those questions are all fair. That's what a journalist's job is to do, to ask those questions. It's my job to give the journalist all of the facts in the hopes that they'll give our side of the University of Louisville side of the story as well. And, you know, and I think when presented with the facts, the public smart enough, they can figure out, well, either U of L screwed up or U of L did something that every other business on the planet does, and they'll figure it out for themselves. And sometimes they'll say, boy, U of L really messed this one up. Sometimes they'll say, you know what, this isn't that big a deal. U of L is just doing what everybody else does. So that's my job, is just put as much information out there as I possibly can, and, you know, hopefully the reporter will give our side of the story and be fair and
so you have
to
work. You have to work these relationships with reporters, and mm-hmm. you know, sometimes I'm sure in the university's view, the reporter gets it wrong or he slants it in a way
that's right.
unfavorable to the university. How do you handle that with those media members? And, you know,
I think since I've been at U of L, it's been almost 5 years now. I think there's only been, boy, there's been a handful of times, maybe two or three times, that I've picked up the phone and called the reporter and said, You screwed up on this one, or you screwed me.
I used to get those calls all the time when I was a reporter.
Well, maybe you made more mistakes than everybody else did. But there have been few and far between where I've actually had to call up a reporter and said that I thought that they were being unfair, or that they wrote something that just wasn't true. And you just tell, and I always appreciated that when I was a reporter, that
right.
somebody would pick up the phone and call and say, in a level-headed fashion, not screaming at me, look, Here's the facts, here's what I told you, here's what we gave you, and here's how you reported it. I don't think that's fair, or I don't think that's accurate. And, you know, that's all you can do.
Well, one last thing I want to ask you about, you know, I was a blogger for a long time and did that, and there's still, I think, I always felt like there was a distinction made between guys like me mm-hmm. and the guys in the legitimate media, and we'll use that word, but mm-hmm. the legitimate media that you know, certainly... PR people paid more attention, or they discounted what bloggers were doing. You know, it's been a few years since I did that. How is that issue being handled these days?
I think PR people are still grappling with this issue of how to deal with bloggers and what are not considered mainstream media. There's no question that we still give more attention to what I would call mainstream media, radio, TV, you know, newspapers, those kinds of things. No question. The question is, when a blogger or somebody calls up and asks you a question or files an open records request or does something like that, do you treat them the same when you know that they're probably coming at this story from a particular angle? It's probably going to include their opinion, and it may not be the old-fashioned journalist, you know, tell both sides of the story, that kind of thing. And I think I think all PR people, including me, are still grappling with how to deal with that. And I don't have a good answer. I just don't.
Well, I know the feeling, because I always felt like some PR people would like know if they sensed the angle I was taking, because I would write all facts laced with opinion. Mm-hmm. And
I always return their phone call. Anybody that calls me, blogger, doesn't matter who they are, I'll always return their email or their phone call. But I might, the level of engagement with that person might be a lot different than it would be with a TV reporter or somebody that's calling me from the Courier Journal.
All right. Well, and I know you wouldn't give me any scoop since we're buddies. But anyway, another time on Rusty Satellite. So let's do it again when we get our holes in one.
Well, that should be pretty shortly here, because the great things come in three, and if this is not considered my third one, I don't know. You know, being on the Rusty Satellite Show, I don't know if that's the number three good news thing or not, but maybe we should go out and play golf this weekend, and then I can have my for sure number three.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Well, as always, it's fun talking to my man, Mark. We've been hanging out together, I guess, since college, and a great honor for Mark. I'm really proud of him. Really appreciate him coming on the show and talking about things to do with his current job at the University of Louisville and the state of journalism today. Can't wait to get out and play golf. I'm sure he's going to get a hole in one very soon. So the way his luck is rolling, you know, everybody, you know, can you imagine that many people congratulating you for something? 350 people on Facebook giving an attaboy to my man Mark Ebert. So anyway, that concludes another edition of the Rusty Satellite Show. I appreciate everyone tuning in. We had a record number of downloads of this show last week, and let's keep the momentum going. Tell your friends that the Rusty Satellite Show is a must listen every week, as are some of the other shows here on the Louisville.am network. We have just go to Louisville.am and look at what you have to choose from. There's family fun, and there's sports shows, and Dan Vonderheide's startup show. They're all good programs and worth listening. Although the beer guys, you know, I think they come in the studio and they spill something on the keyboard. Sometimes the keys get stuck around here. I don't get that. But anyway, we're having a good time, and the Rusty Satellite Show will be back next week with two more of the most interesting people in the Ville. And until then, I'm Rick Redding, signing off.
Thanks for listening to the Rusty Satellite Podcast with your host, Rick Redding. Next week, Rick will be right back here on Louisville.am with another stellar lineup of great guests. You can let Rick know what you think by sending an email to rick@louisvilleky.com. He's on Twitter, too, @RickyRedding. For more information about the show, including photos of Rusty Satellite Show guests, go to LouisvilleKY.com, the pulse of the city. Airplanes in the buildings every time I